Hey, it's Cam. Welcome back to another episode of This Might Be Helpful, and I sincerely hope that it is. Today's episode is brought to you by the upcoming journey to Sacred Valley, Peru, this September 1st through to the 7th. We are going on a mystic pilgrimage to one of the most potent and magical landscapes on Earth. I believe at this time there are 4 spots left. So if you feel like really going on an adventure, doing lots of yoga, meditation, and diving into, let's say, a unfathomable realm facilitated by a ritualistic consumption of ayahuasca under the guidance of a master healer, I would love to see you there. Link will be in the show notes below. Today's episode is also brought to you by the Open Meditation Platform. If you would like to have 30 days of free meditation and breath work, you can sign up using the link below. And if you do, then they might continue to hire me, which would be great because we gotta turn this into a living, you know? We gotta work with the portals that we have available to us, and that is really how I've done most of my, let's say, earnings, by working with portals in the vortex of abundance. So clearly, sense-making is not on the top of my mind right now, but I trust that those that are listening to these episodes are as divergent and fantastical as myself. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be listening to this. Moving on, without further ado, let's get into what I want to discuss today, which is shamans, DNA, molecular biology, and dimethyltryptamine, i.e. DMT. I've always wanted to go to Peru. Since well before I even knew what Peru was, I must have heard it when I was younger and developed an early association, always telling my parents, I gotta go to Peru, I wanna go to Peru. And they were saying, you are 4 years old. You don't know what Peru is. And I said, well, that may be true, but that does not lessen my desire. And then everybody clapped. Now, I don't know how long I've wanted to go to Peru, but I decided to go this year off of the back of reading one of my favorite psychedelic books ever, which is The Cosmic Serpent by Jeremy Narby. And I don't think I've done an episode on this. It was one of those books that once I read it, it wasn't just new information, it was information that changes the way you see information. So Jeremy Narby was a Canadian anthropologist who was fascinated with this question that had stumped Western science. And this question was, how is it that without any modern technology, shamans in remote Peru had acquired such a vast and sophisticated understanding of molecular biology and botanical pharmacology without any research labs, rigorous studies, or even written records? These shamans accessed an incredibly robust body of knowledge relating to botanical chemistry with a degree of precision and accuracy that couldn't have been acquired through trial and error alone. And we're talking about people living in the depths of the Amazon, upwards of 80,000, maybe 100,000 different plants, and a sheer scope of combinations that boggle the mind, right? So Jeremy Narby decided to go to Peru himself and discover how it is that these shamans came to possess such knowledge. And when he first arrived, and he asked them that question, the shamans replied, saying, "Well, the plants told us." And they stated it so matter-of-factly that it threw him off without any element of humor. Their answer was that the plants tell us. You big Western dummy. But the plants aren't talking to you over in Canada. The plants aren't talking to you over in North America. For most people, no. For most people raised in the more rigid parameters of Western institutions, those of us taught to believe it only once we see it, we can have a hard time grasping an idea like this. And so these shamans told Jeremy stories. Stories of spirits and visions. Of great serpents and Mother Earth. The shamans described to Jeremy that when they consumed ayahuasca, a brew containing dimethyltryptamine, DMT, made from the Benisteriopsis capi vine and the Psychotria viridis shrub, they would transcend the world of immediate senses and enter a visionary state in which they received knowledge directly from the plants themselves. And Jeremy, who is an anthropologist trained under the considerably rigid parameters of the West, came to the eventual and hesitant hypothesis that these ayahuasca-induced visions were not mere hallucinations, but a form of experiential knowledge acquisition, in which shamans were gaining access to a level of reality corresponding directly to molecular life, receiving information stored within DNA, mediated by the symbolic language of visions. Visions supported by the long-standing cultural, geographical, and botanical influence of their environment. And in these visions, the spirits most frequently encountered were those of serpents, associated with the giving of knowledge, with life, birth, evolution, and transformation. And these serpents were most frequently intertwined in the form of a double helix, an image that we have come to associate with DNA, the universal coding of life and the source of all biological potential. Now, Jeremy was very hesitant to communicate this hypothesis because Western science, Western medicine, these bodies, these knowledge systems, have a long-standing history of canceling anybody who is courageous or dumb enough, I use air quotes for that, to question its methodologies. Jeremy's hypothesis suggested a radical form of knowledge acquisition where instead of learning conceptually, ritualistic ayahuasca consumption allowed these shamans to directly experience and observe the building blocks of life. And as you can imagine, these ideas were not well received in the West, which is generally operated via a process of reductionism where complex systems are broken down into individual components and segregated into distinct disciplines, which are then taught as separate fields of study. Separate, 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 the biologists say it's biology. The physicists say it's physics. The shamans say, why don't you find out for yourself? The shamans say that what you see is not separate. The shamans say to surrender the self with doubts, surrender the self with anything to prove, surrender the voices clamoring inside for evidence, and see what emerges. And this separation in the West is compounded by a prevailing arrogance, which tends to dismiss any knowledge systems that don't conform to its methodologies by labeling them as alternative, primitive, unscientific, or, I dare say, woo. But when the West finally began to conduct their own studies on ayahuasca and specifically DMT, they found that things were beginning to stack up in favor of Jeremy's hypothesis. And for those of you that have been lingering and discovering and curious about these, let's say, fields of study, things that may have been labeled as alternative by dominant knowledge systems, theories like the stoned ape theory. I believe it was Terence McKenna that first proposed this theory that psilocybin-containing mushrooms were a critical evolutionary catalyst in the development of humans as we know them today. That there is a unexplained gap in our history where our brain doubled in size over the span of 200,000 years, which is not a long time in the eyes of evolution. That these ground-foraging, semi-bipedal primates began to move out of the plains that were flooded in Africa into the grasslands where there were cows, buffalo, great beasts, and as these beasts would roam the land, and the monkeys would follow along, flipping over stumps and rocks, finding grubs, bugs, they also discovered that in the feces of these great beasts, there were mushrooms. And these mushrooms contained what we refer to now as psilocybin, the hallucinogenic element of magic mushrooms. And that is through this consumption that we had a leap in cognitive functioning, where we learned to communicate, to express, to develop language, to throw, and through throwing, hunt, through hunting, this explosion of protein and amino acids and nutrition that we were not getting before through foraging plants. And it is through this vortex of conditions that we experienced a leap in our evolutionary standing. And there are a lot of people out there that will kibosh the stoned ape theory. Personally, I am not here to decide the rightness or wrongness of any of these things, nor am I here saying that you should go to Peru and do a boatload of ayahuasca and you will have all the knowledge you'll ever need. I am not here with answers. What I like is discussing attractive thoughts. I like to explore and be curious and ask questions, and through the asking of questions, come up with more questions than answers. I'm not here telling you what you should believe. This is all a little journey that hopefully invigorates a sense of curiosity and fascination with the unknown, and a respect for how different cultures, societies, civilizations throughout history have come to possess their knowledge. And so these Western scientists began to explore the effects of dimethyltryptamine, and they came across some very interesting findings, and these are findings that are coming out each and every year as legislation softens and we can explore these compounds in greater detail without fear of being thrown in prison, or worse. Now, typically, the brain segregates and organizes information into specialized networks built through association. Under normal conditions, the brain's global communication, i.e., the transferal of information between distinct regions and hemispheres, is fairly balanced, so that these regions are distinct and boundaries exist that ensure we can actually function, that we are not bombarded by everything, everywhere, all at once. And this helps us to function while maintaining a fairly cohesive sense of self and environment. But recent research has shown that dimethyltryptamine, the primary psychedelic component in ayahuasca, appears to diminish these boundaries between networks while simultaneously boosting global neural communication. So these inner segregated boundaries of the brain begin to dissolve, and information that was previously compartmentalized is now no longer contained. The habitual hierarchy of how we process information is completely disrupted. So rather than taking information in via what we have always known to be true, or assumed to be true, rather than taking information in and immediately associating and putting it in a box, these boxes lose their edges, and a global synergy occurs in the brain. And it's, to me, kind of reminiscent of, I believe it's kind of a little urban myth that was passed around for many years, that we only use 10% of our brain. And then that movie Limitless came out, where he could take a pill that allowed him to access 100% of his brain. We use our brain, right? All of our brain is in use. But how that brain organizes itself, and therefore how that brain is interfacing and relating to its environment, is what can change. And the sum of a brain working in complete cohesion, where the boundaries of the self have also dissolved, and so there is not such a I, me, and my getting in the way of awareness and environment, may lead to some very interesting experiences. So when these segregated networks soften and dissolve, the result is that this egoic sense of self diminishes too, and in its place there exists a profound sense of unity with the environment, with surroundings, with life itself. And this sense of unity arises as what was separate before now becomes connected. And this allows for a more direct and unfiltered experience of sensory inputs. So what does all of this mean? Hey? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not claiming to know. Hopefully, there are people listening to this podcast right now that do have a better grasp of this than I. Because there are certainly implications here that I feel should be addressed and at least brought into discourse and conversation. Conversation with the intention of adding to context rather than being right. But what I do know is that Jeremy Narby's insights are beginning to align with models of quantum biology that suggest a universe where consciousness and matter are intertwined and related in ways that classic physics can't explain yet. And this conversion of shamanic wisdom in Western science isn't to choose one or the other, but rather an opportunity to foster a greater sense of wonder and respect for our miraculous brain and the interconnectedness we share with the world around us. If anything, this is a calling to view life's complexities not just as subjects to be broken down and split apart to be studied separately, but as conduits to a deeper connection with the world that wants to be seen, a deeper connection with a world that wants to be heard and felt, experienced beyond the boundaries of civilized conditioning. Underneath the haze of fear, rigidity, analytical adherence, underneath the numbness required by major capitalistic systems, the people within them to continue operating at their best, highest output, underneath all the layers of the civilized man, there is a magic, there is a knowing, there is an ancient, primordial wisdom contained within the coding of our DNA, and this DNA wishes to express itself. The source of your genetic potential is a thing unexplored that arises, emerges, unfolds in relation to the conditions of your experience, and through disrupting this monotony, letting go of what we assume to be true, we may come into contact, direct, unfiltered, mitigated, boundless contact with an unfathomably beautiful, complex universe. And this is leaving out the recent discoveries around DNA being a natural source of biophoton emission, meaning that your very DNA emits light. You are luminescent. You glow. All of life glows. A subtle, imperceptible essence of light emitted at all times, not to be seen by the naked eye, but what about the open eye? What about the shaman? Deep in the realm of Mother Aya, boundaries dissolved, brain working in complete synergy, coherency of organized information, interfacing completely with a raw, wild, intelligent environment, an environment full of life emitting its own light, plants and animals communicating what they are, received, felt, heard, experienced by ones that are completely open. So that's what I've been thinking about lately. It felt good to get that off my chest. We don't need to hold on to these things by ourselves. And there's a freedom to expressing ideas that don't make sense yet. If you can take anything away from this episode, it's that you don't need to have things figured out in order to express, discover, communicate, connect, converse. If there's anything else you take away from this episode, it's that there is also an invitation to join me in a group of conscious citizen scientists and explorers this September in the Peruvian Sacred Valley as we adventure into the heart of this mystery and find out for ourselves. A couple spots left. See you there.